Hi there, I'm Ashley Banfield, and this is Drop Dead Serious. We're now in week 3 of the Karen Reed retrial, and today the courtroom turned up the heat. On the witness stand, a paramedic who says she heard Karen Reed confess, and yet she never wrote it down. There was also a lifelong friend of the Albert family who suddenly cannot remember the Albert family dog, and a police-friendly witness who may not be as neutral as she claimed. Today, we're skipping the slow stuff and we're going right to the highlights. So let's get started with Sarah Levinson, a nurse and longtime friend of both Julie Nagle and Brian Albert Jr. Remember, Brian lived at the home where John O'Keefe was found frozen in the snow. Sarah testified that she'd been to the Albert home more than 20 times, including the night of the fateful party, and that everything that night seemed normal. Sarah said that she and Julie arrived at the party around 7 or 8 p.m., driven by Julie's dad, and said that when they got there, the place was already filled with members of the Albert family.
Four other girls showed up. So Courtney Alba came by herself, and then Catherine Duty, Emily Fabiano, and Mary Kent all came together.
Are those friends of Brian Jr.'s?
Yes.
Did you know who all of them were?
Yes.
Were you friendly with them?
Some of them, yes. We were all friendly, but not friends.
Did one of Brian Jr.'s cousins come at some point?
Yes.
You mentioned that the visitors, the young woman that came to see Brian Jr. left. After they left, did somebody else come to or arrive at Fairview?
After they left, yes.
And who was that?
It was Brian's father. His name is also Brian. Mr. Higgins. Brian's mother came back, his sister Caitlin, and then his aunt Jennifer and his uncle Matt.
She said she left the party around 1:30 to 2 a.m. with her friend Julie, and that they were driven home by Jennifer and Matt McCabe. She also said she left through the front door that night. That would be right in view of the front lawn. And she said she saw only a light dusting of snow. But what she didn't see was a body in the front yard. Nothing seemed unusual at all, she said. And if Karen had hit John around 12:30 and left him there to die, his body might very well have been visible from that front door, right? Especially since the major snow hadn't yet fallen. And on cross-examination, Karen's lawyer, Alan Jackson, went further and focused on the fact that Sarah said she'd been to 34 Fairview dozens of times. But last year, during the first trial, she swore under oath that she had never met the family dog, a German shepherd named Chloe. But this time round, Sarah wasn't so sure.
You had never met their dog, had you?
Their dog?
Their dog.
I'm not completely sure.
Didn't you testify about a year ago in another proceeding that although you had been to the Albert home many times, you had never actually met the dog?
If that's what it says I said, then yes.
Defense attorney Alan Jackson used that hesitation to shine a light on something bigger. How credible is a witness who forgets the family dog after 24 visits to the home? He also got her to admit that before her police interview, she spoke to Julie Nagle, her friend and fellow party guest. Well, that may not be illegal, but it sure doesn't help. Not when the defense is suggesting that group coordination is going on behind the scenes. And Karen's lawyer tried to land another blow, too. This time through two other people, Ryan Nagle and Heather Maxon, who drove to 34 Fairview Road around 12:30 a.m. Ryan was there to pick up his sister Julie Nagle from that house party. He says he drove to the house with his then-girlfriend Heather and another friend named Ricky. As they approached the house, Ryan says they saw a black SUV, one that matches Karen Reed's vehicle. It was right ahead of them, and that it was driving normally. The SUV had its interior dome light on, and they could see a woman they identified as Karen Reed in the driver's seat. Julie came out of the house and invited her brother Ryan, as well as Heather and Ricky, to come on inside for a drink. But they all declined. And that's when Julie decided to stay at the party, rather than taking her brother up on the offer for a free ride home. So Julie went back inside while her brother, Ryan, as well as his pals, drove off. So what made these witnesses stand out? Well, a lot. They had to concede what they did not see in the front yard. There was no body lying there. There was nobody yelling. There were no obvious signs that anything had gone wrong in the front yard. There was nobody lying there in the snow at 12:30 p.m., right around the same time that prosecutors insist Karen Reed had just rammed her boyfriend with her dark SUV. When asked if the SUV was driving erratically, Ryan said no. It was going the speed limit and staying in its lane. Just another car on a cold night. Heather Maxson backed that up. She admitted she'd been drinking earlier and that she was impaired, but she remembered clearly that Karen Reed was alone in the SUV and that nothing looked suspicious outside the Albert house. This is exactly the kind of testimony that Karen's lawyers are banking on. Because if Karen Reed left John O'Keefe to die in that front yard, as prosecutors claim, then why didn't anyone else see him there? Especially within minutes of prosecutors alleging this horrible incident had happened. One of the biggest moments of the day came from Katie McLaughlin, a firefighter paramedic who responded to 34 Fairview Road on the morning John O'Keefe was found. She told the jury that Karen Reed was being calmed down by Jen McKay, but was clearly hysterical and shaking. The paramedic said, Karen blurted out, I hit him, I hit him, and insisted that Karen said those words multiple times, even repeated those words to a nearby police officer. But under fierce cross-examination by defense attorney Alan Jackson, that paramedic, Katie McLaughlin, had to admit something, that she never wrote the statement down in her report and that she never memorialized it anywhere else. And when asked why she didn't follow up on something that sounded like a confession at the scene of a homicide, Katie McLaughlin said it wasn't her place.
I felt bad for her at the time. It was a very disturbing scene, and I did not want to push further down that road. It's not my job, and I didn't feel comfortable doing it.
If you watched the first trial, you might remember that this paramedic, Katie McLaughlin, said that she barely knew a girl named Caitlin Albert, the homeowner's daughter, and that Caitlin was just somebody she knew from high school. But today, that story started to unravel. Under cross-examination, paramedic McLaughlin admitted that she'd gone on overnight trips with Caitlin, that they'd been in photos together, and that Caitlin was a college roommate of her best friend. The defense wanted the jury to hear loud and clear that this first responder, who said that she heard Karen Reed confess, also has a personal tie to the very family the defense insists is orchestrating a cover-up. Next up on the witness stand, a key figure from day one in this case, the man who oversaw the scene where John O'Keefe was found, retired Canton Police Lieutenant Paul Gallagher. Gallagher told the jury that when he got the call that morning, the weather was brutal. We're talking blizzard, with winds whipping from all directions and the snow pounding down. He said it was the first time in his entire career that he'd ever processed a crime scene in that kind of weather. And the methods that they used, let's just say, unconventional. Instead of using swabs to collect blood at the scene, police used red Solo cups because everything was frozen solid. And when they needed to clear the snow away and look for evidence, Gallagher admitted they used a leaf blower to uncover things like the broken cocktail glass near John O'Keefe's body. And on direct examination, what I call friendly fire, Gallagher framed those decisions as practical, even creative. He said The tools may have been unorthodox, but the conditions called for improvising. But on cross-examination, the questions weren't so friendly. And Karen Reed's attorney, Alan Jackson, he pressed hard. He got Gallagher to admit that those aren't normal crime scene tools and that the leaf blower and solo cups could have compromised the evidence. Gallagher also confessed that despite his involvement, he never wrote a report about his work that morning. Gallagher made sure that the officers who reported to him, that they instead did all that work. In fact, he had to admit that the first time he was ever officially interviewed about the scene of John's death was actually 2.5 years later. So to recap, red solo cups for collecting blood, a leaf blower to move the snow, no report written, and a 2.5 year delay before any formal questioning. And this is the officer who was in charge of preserving that crime scene. That's where we'll leave it for today. A virtual blizzard of facts and evidence in a real-life blizzard of snow. And a crime scene that seems to raise more questions the more you dig beneath the layers. We heard from witnesses who say they saw nothing unusual outside the Albert home. And a paramedic who says she heard a confession, but never wrote it down. A paramedic with pretty friendly ties to the family that the defense suspects is involved in a cover-up. And now a retired lieutenant admitting he never filed a report about the biggest crime scene of his career. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new update on this case, but I also want to let you know that I am covering Diddy. This is day one of Diddy today, jury selection. I've got a whole podcast outlining everything that got us to this point. So if you're trying to remember everything since Diddy became a story about a federal case, I got you covered. Just check it out, Drop Dead Serious. Full update, full primer on why we're in a federal courtroom with P. Diddy. And then I'm also going to be doing regular updates on the Diddy case as well. I'm Ashley Banfield. Thank you so much for listening. And remember that the truth isn't just serious, it's drop dead serious.